going to be oral.
Okay.
Yeah. I may take notes just for.
Okay, but it's not. It's not a video.
No.
Okay.
Oh no videos.
Okay, that's fine. Okay.
I'm going to give this to you too.
All right.
It's just the disclosure thing.
Right. You just sign here. Stay the 16th.
Yep. And then there's a spot at the top. I guess I can print your name too.
Oh, I can do that.
There's a print spot. Thank you.
You're welcome. So this is for the 20th anniversary of the Writing Center?
Yeah. I'm
trying to figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah, they're counting from not the very, very first rendition of the Writing Center,
from
the
2001. When it opened? Or when it was?
When it opened in 2000.
Okay.
Because from what I gathered from the other stuff that we had, there was a different kind of Writing Center, but it wasn't really the same as
it wasn't.
What we know now.
No, it was, I can tell you about it if you want to.
That'd be beautiful.
Okay. I don't know a whole lot about it, but I know that it was, it was considered remedial. It was primarily to support. We then offered courses, non-credit bearing courses, for students who did not meet threshold requirements to take 101. I think it was called 098 and 099, I think were the numbers. And the Writing Center was primarily aimed at those students. If you want to know more about that, I don't know if she still works here, Joan D'Antoni.
I will pass along the name.
Yeah, I think she was. She may still be. She was adjunct faculty, and now she's one of those permanent instructors.
Hmm.
And, of course, Ruth Miller. I'm sure you've heard her.
Mm-hmm. What was Joe's last name?
D'Antoni, D'Antoni. And there were other people who taught in there. She's just the one whose name I can bring to mind.
Yeah, that makes sense. It was a while ago to remember all of the names.
Yeah, and I really didn't have much to do with that. I mean, it was pretty much kind of a separate enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
Even after I became chair, I didn't really have much to do with it.
Do you remember how it got started to change into the Writing Center?
Oh, yes. Very much so. I have the whole story.
I don't know where the best place to start with that would be then, so if you want to tell me a little bit about it, that might be the easiest way to go.
All right. So, I'm going to tell it from my point of view. I'm sure others may have other things. I had always thought that we needed a real writing center, not something stuck in the basement that was, whose vision, I guess, whose job was to help students who couldn't really do writing at the university level. And I had been arguing for that for quite a while.
Mm.
When I was chair, it was always one of my, the department voted on the priorities for action, but it was always one of those that I promoted. And my vision from the beginning was that it would be a resource center for, I just keep saying my, because there really weren't that many other people who were advocates of it.
Right.
There'd be a resource center for students at all levels of the university, as well as for faculty, both in their own writing and in helping them in teaching. You know. So that was always one of the goals that that I thought the English, one of the things I thought the English department really needed it, and I thought that, the university needed it, and I thought we should do it. So in 1990, I know the date because something really significant in my life happened that time, so I'm pretty clear on the chronology. In 1997, we went through our 10-year SACS accreditation. That may have been the year before, I'm not sure. But it was in response to the SACS accreditation. And SACS, do you know, about SACS? Okay. So SACS had a had, probably still has, a requirement that in order to teach, be the teacher of record, you had to have at least 18 hours of graduate education. Do you know this story already?
I know that that part still is true. And that's one of the reasons that we're, the first year master's started in the Writing Center.
Right. Okay. So, but the exegesis for it, what happened was, so we had, I think it was, something like 40 sections of 101 and 102 each semester that were taught by first year MA students. So we had this, and then they had, SACS had given us a kind of pass on that in the last accreditation review, which was before I was chair, actually before I was even at U of L, that because we offered this course 602 in the summer, that students would take this 6-hour course 602, and that would prepare them to teach 101 and 102.
Right.
When SACS came back, and this would be in 1996 or 97, they were sort of, I don't know, everybody was appalled and surprised that this, and, and it was like, well, you can't do that anymore. You can't do that, and you shouldn't be doing that, and all this. And there was some feeling on the part of other people who were engaged in these conversations that this was just something the English department had dreamed up, willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. And I had to keep making the argument that this is not the fault of the English department. This is the way the university decided to deliver first-year writing. I should say, by this point, we no longer had... We no longer had 099 and 098 and 099. And that's another story if you're interested, why we gave those up. What we did in response to that.
So was there a gap for a while where there was no remedial writing center and no writing center as we know it now?
I'm not sure because I can't 100% remember when I think the 098, 099 thing came later. But to answer that, I mean, that's going to be in the record somewhere. Mm-hmm. But it was all kind of about the same time. I mean, these things were happening. But anyway, so, I made the argument that, the department was not acting out of, out of the rules. These were the rules that were, we had been told to operate under for the last 10 years. And it was a decision, it was the university's decision, not the English department's decision. So then it was like, what are you going to do? Well, okay, so all those first-year MA students are no longer going to be in the classroom. Two problems. How do you, who's going to teach those 40 sections of 101, 102? And two, what's going to happen to any MA student that we want to recruit with a fellowship, an assistantship? So, at about the same time, and if this is too much, I'm too deep in the grass.
It's perfect.
At about the same time, we got a new president, whose name was John Shoemaker, who was very dynamic, had lots of really great ideas. In the end, he kind of crashed and burnt after he left U of L. So his name is not, like a famous. He's not, and we do have a Shoemaker building, but he's not somebody people brag a lot about.
Right.
But he was very dynamic and really good for the university, and he had a vision, which up to then nobody had. And he was also, he was from the humanities. He was the dean of humanities at Ohio State early in his career and was a classics. So he was really, he wanted the university, he wanted to push the research one, but he was also he realized that we had to have a strong undergraduate program, and at the core of that was humanities, particularly English. So he was like, really, he wanted to build up our PhD, and that's why we got an endowed chair, which Bruce Horner has now, and some other stuff. And then we also got a new dean, and his priority was, he was a biologist, his priority was undergraduate education. We never had a dean, as far as I know, who's first, I don't know, maybe we did. He really cared about undergraduate education. So over the course of a few days, you know, I had this thing sitting in my lap, and, you know, one of the things that I was hearing was that the faculty was just going to have to take it on, and even if everybody on the faculty taught an additional course, we still wouldn't mm-hmm. be able to cover it, and, you know, so I went into my office, and it's all happened over one weekend, because I had to get, it was an emergency for the university. It was also an emergency for me.
Absolutely.
I had something that had, that something bad was going to happen in my life on, like, the Monday after that. So I sat down, I was by myself in my office, and I started making a spreadsheet. I didn't know how to, this was before I had spreadsheets, you know, I just, like, made a spreadsheet. And I tried to figure out how we could cover 40 sections. I'm sorry, let me go back a step. Randy Moore, the dean, he understood that the department could not take it on. So he came to me and said, I will give you 4 full-time assistant professors who will teach nothing but 101 and 102, and that's how we'll cover the gap. And I went into my office and I thought, that's a disaster. You know, these would be tenure-track full-time faculty. I said, that's just a disaster, because that makes us a two-tiered department, mm-hmm. and it widens the split between literature and writing and composition. Right. And since I was the first chair who was both, I didn't want that to happen. So, still the only chair who's been rhetoric and composition. But so I went in my office. I tried to think, how can we cover those 40 sections without, and make those seven or eight, or something like that, full-time positions, like the same as everybody else. Mm-hmm. And I started moving things around. And I put, every faculty member had a first-year comp class, regardless of who they were. And then I upped the enrollments on certain classes and, you know, changed a few things around. It was really I wasn't lying, but you can do a lot of, we have classes that never make it their enrollment. Mm-hmm. So I just dropped the enrollment, and that allowed us to say we were covering the same number of classes or raising enrollment, I can't remember. And so I had this all, you know, laid out. And then I went to the dean and I said, this is getting back to the Writing Center, I promise you. I said, if you will let us do this, I will see if the department will agree to everybody in the university teaching, in the department teaching first year writing. And he was just thrilled with that. That was like his dream come true. So I went to the university, to the department, and they all agreed, and I'll just skip over the rest of it. But one of the things I said that we really, in one of those positions I said would be a writing center, and those MA students who previously were teaching these 40 sections, they would be writing center tutors. So they thought that was a great idea too. I had to go talk to the provost because she wanted to make sure that she could, you know, believe in me. And she signed on too. So it took us a long time to hire the faculty, but we immediately went to work looking for a director of the Writing Center. And I wanted to get somebody who would be there from the beginning, who would be able to negotiate like where it's going to be and, you know, and all that. So it had to be a senior faculty member. So that's pretty much how it happened. I mean, it was like a lot of things that happen when you're an administrator, you know, you spend tons of hours on trying to get people to agree to priorities. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it's never what you agree to. It's always what some administrator thinks is a good thing to do. And what you have to do is take what you want to do and write it in a way that shows how it responds to that priority for action. So the note, the part that went to the president said that new faculty will up the research output of the department and help us become a better known, he wanted us to be like one of the best PhD programs, And for the dean, it was everybody in the university, every member of the English department will teach at least one section of first-year composition. The department voted on that unanimously. I don't think they were all happy with it, but they didn't want to bring in a second-tier faculty. So the Writing Center was actually, it came out of all of that mess. Behind it was thinking, because I thought, and Brian Hewitt, who was the, he directed, we used to have a WR program, which provided assistance for people who were teaching writing intensive courses. Eventually, after I was chair, that got folded into the Writing Center, too. But he and I knew the importance of having a Writing Center. And I also knew that if I was going to send all these faculty members into teaching something they some of them never taught before, none of them really wanted to teach, and many of them were really either disdainful or terrified, that a Writing Center was necessary. You had to be able to say, if you have a student, and I know that Writing Centers are so much more than this, but they got hung up on grammar. That was what they were all, and that's how, for a long time, that's all they did was correct the grammar. I said, if you have a student who's having a problem with comma faults, because I don't know, for some reason that seems to be the iconical grammatical error, I said, you just send them to the Writing Center, and they'll tell them or write a note saying, this student needs some help with comma faults. You don't need to do it yourself. You just send them to the Writing Center. So it was, it was like a good thing all around.
It was support for the student, but also support for the faculty.
Support for the faculty, support for the student. And it also, because it's increasingly became a support for the university. And I think that's one of the things that it was when Carol was Writing Center director as well. But I think Bronwyn has worked really hard to make it really, really vibrant in that way. And I also think because the provost now, Beth Boehm, who was in the English department, was here when all that happened. She tried to set up connections between the graduate program and the Writing Center, so they had dissertation week, and she would fund some of that stuff, dissertation writing week and things like that. So she was somebody who was a kind of, we drew on for support as well.
That's awesome. They still do the dissertation writing retreats, too.
That's great.
They managed to keep
that. That's great.
Were there any specific challenges that you remember through that process, other than the rearranging entirely of who was teaching what, or what, did it kind of come together relatively smoothly?
Once everybody signed on, that part was not hard. We hired that person, I think, fairly quickly. I'd have to go back and check when we hired Carol. And we got a bunch of really good applicants, and Carol Mattingly, who was the first director, I had been her dissertation director, and she had gone to LSU, where I had been on the faculty before. She fulfilled all, we had several excellent applicants, but I knew her. And I knew what I did not want, I just couldn't take on, was the responsibility of building it myself. Because there are people in the department, any department, anywhere, who will be the director or the whatever of something, but have this kind of, earned ignorance, developed. People who just can't get stuff done and probably could. But, if they just don't get stuff done long enough, somebody else is going to step in and do it for them. I didn't want somebody like that. I want somebody who could hit the ground running. So she did most of that, and she would be a good person to talk to if you haven't already arranged.
I forget who's on the list of names, but I'll pass on.
She's the one who built it from the beginning. She's the one who got it into the library.
We were wondering about that, too, because it seems like a prime location.
Yeah.
It was before, I think it was in Strickler Hall. for a while?
No, it was in the basement of Bingham. I think. I'm pretty sure that's where it was.
Yeah, I think I had read that it was in the basement first and then Strickler for a while and then here, but maybe we had the Strickler part not quite right.
Okay. I'm not sure if it was Strickler was like a transition or whether it was just the last... I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure Carol... she did a couple of things that were really great in starting it off. One is that she was really active. I don't know... I'm not entirely sure how the negotiation to get it into the library went, but she was really powerful in making the argument that it was the best place, and it should mm-hmm. not be in a basement. It should be a welcoming place. It should be someplace where students gather. And then the other thing is that she built a sort of research program that undergirded that.
Hmm.
So have you heard about the Writing Center's research project?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so she started this thing called the Writing Center's research project, and the documents, the archive, should exist somewhere in the Writing Center. She collected, she did archival research. And she started to collect an archive of Writing Center documents about Writing Centers, not just here, but across the country. She interviewed or surveyed many, many people, and I don't know where that is. Because when she stopped being Writing Center director, nobody else really wanted to do that. But she did. She it became the genesis of several dissertations. You know, if you go back and look at what the dissertations are, you can pretty well tell who the faculty. Because when Brian Hewitt was here, we had all these assessment dissertations. We don't. Almost nobody does an assessment dissertation anymore because we don't teach the course
right. In
assessment. But when Carol was here, she taught a course in writing. She taught the practicum and she taught graduate courses and that fed into that. And one of the Watson conferences was on writing centers. About the Watson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and like all of them, it was published somehow. But you should try to find the archives.
I will.
That she...
That's wonderful.
Yeah. And surely the document... She would have archived whatever we did.
Mm-hmm.
Or it should be somewhere in the English department. That stuff is usually not thrown out.
Right. So along with... So you mentioned English 101 and 102 as being kind of the feeders for the Writing
yeah.
Center, and then
mm-hmm.
she was doing all the research. Were... the intro-level English courses the main focus of the Writing Center, or were you able to pull in like the upper-level courses in the faculty?
You know, I don't know. You'd have to go back and look and kind of trace that. Although I think they kept those records about, you know, who came to the
mm-hmm.
Writing Center. So, this is just... Can you turn this off for a minute? When I taught upper-level English courses, I didn't teach grammar in the class unless I got a stack of papers and, like, there were, like, 15 comma faults. Then I would, like, do a quick little thing.
Right.
I didn't correct grammar, which is what I had to convince the people who were not trained in rhetoric and comp not to do. And, I mean, I gave them all the research and how it's done. But I would some, you know, if I could see something consistently, you know, a consistent problem, and it wouldn't necessarily be grammar. Sometimes it was, you know, cohesion or transitions or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't going to stop and have. I mean, I just couldn't because I was teaching these texts. But I would mark transition, and then I would say, go talk to somebody in the Writing Center and show them this paragraph. So I did, you know, I did like identify things that I thought students, rather than just, you know, edit it for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I think maybe more and more people, I don't know what other people did, truly, more and more everybody who gets a job teaching anything in an English department will have taught comp, so.
Right.
You know, or taught writing at some level, so.
Do you remember if the students that came to the Writing Center were usually sent by an instructor, or was there like advertising to get them to come in on their own?
I don't know, because I really didn't keep up with what they did on a day-to-day. Right. That all of that, though, I know they kept records of, because, like, this is a different example. I just know this because I was more involved in it. When we stopped teaching 098 and 099, it was because the, it was the county or the state said that we could not deliver remedial courses anymore. And so there was all this stuff about where are these students going to go. They could be every, they could have been, they could be in all their engineering courses here, but where are they going to go? They'd have to go over to Jefferson Community College or someplace like that to get their, to take their English course. And Brian Hewitt, who was the director of the WR program and who was an assessment specialist, said this to me, and I didn't understand how it was work, whether it would work either, but he said, we're just not going to teach 098 and 099. They're just going to, we're going to mainstream them. And then he kept records about were they failing at a greater rate than anybody else in the class, and it turns out they weren't. So I'm certain that they kept records about that. Right. I have no idea where they are, though.
We can try to track them down. Okay. Another little research project for
yes.
us.
Yes, yeah. Isn't that thing? Well, they must be. I mean, they'd be on a computer. Ruth Miller would be the person to ask about that. And Carol, who I think would be more than willing to talk about it. And she was, I mean, very instrumental in mm-hmm. making it what it is.
Yeah.
And she lives in Louisville, so.
I think we might have had her on the list of people to talk to.
No, I put a big star by her name.
Will do.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned that as you were teaching, you would refer students to the Writing Center mm-hmm. as it was applicable. Do you remember if your work with the Writing Center, either setting it up or afterwards, influenced your teaching at all? Or was it just that it was another resource that you knew you could refer people to?
No, I don't think it influenced my teaching. I guess I used it as a, when I would teach, I mainly taught 105, and I, because I was teaching it in a way, and it was a program connected with Ohio State, and 105 worked out better, and so I had really good writers, but, you know, I would, and there I would stop and talk more about, you know, not surface stuff, but, I mean, we would generally talk about introductions. We would talk about not letting your evidence speak for itself. You know, we would talk about all these things because that would be part of what the class was about. I did do some of that. I mean, I brought that terminology because I was taught writing intensive courses. So I would bring that terminology in. But I think I would have done that regardless of the Writing Center because right. I'm a trained writing teacher.
Right, it was already what you were
It was
doing.
Already part of my, you know, my background and experience. Mm-hmm.
Do you know how the early master's students took the transition from working in the Writing Center to then going into the classroom? Maybe a little bit outside of what you were focused on.
I don't know. You would the place where that would be documented would be through the first year composition office, and they also stopped doing 602 in the fall, so they did it in this, like, I think they all took it in this, I mean in the summer, so it was, they'd have to take 602 before they taught 101. They took it consecutively.
That's still how it is.
Not consecutively, concurrently.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it would have had that change. Brian Hewitt was comp director for quite a while. He would be somebody you might be able to ask. Bronwyn was comp director for quite a while. So they would know. I didn't have that much to do with it because mm-hmm. I was, you know, when you're chair of a really large, complicated department, you delegate.
Right.
I mean, it just wasn't part. I mean, I just trusted them to do that. If there was a problem, they would bring it to the department.
Right. So you were mostly there at the very beginning to set it up, to advocate for it, to go through, like, the bureaucratic red tape, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, my main contribution was administrative. I mean, I think what I did, the most important thing I did was to craft a proposal that could be, that spoke to what I understood were the priorities of the people who were going to be able to make the decision. And I think I'm very good at doing that. I think I'm a rhetorician. I mean, and I think that the memo that I wrote, I always say that memo that I wrote, which resulted in, like, us hiring all these people in the Writing Center and all that, where I explained how we would do it and what the benefits were, both for the doctoral student, you know, da, da, da. Mm-hmm. So the president would like it, and the dean would like it, and the faculty would take on. I think of all the stuff I've written in my life, and I've done a lot of writing, I've published a lot, and I've written a lot as an administrator and a teacher. That was probably the most important thing I ever wrote, because it had real consequences for people in a way that my scholarship, while I think it's good, does not have real world consequences in that way.
Yeah, this is going kind of directly to the practical problem of the first year students coming in.
Yeah, and changed the lives of 7 people who probably wouldn't have a job now.
That's true. Did you see any, like, other administrative challenges or anything that you had to go through later, either as staff changed or as time went on, or did the Writing Center stay pretty stable from that?
Well, I'm trying to think. This was not me. This was Susan Griffin, who was the chair after me. I think there were some problems with one of the people who was in it, who was the Writing Center director, and she had to be removed, but I don't really know the details of that.
That's totally fine.
Okay.
Yeah. I was just kind of getting the feeling that it was more or less pretty stable and consistent, so I didn't know if I was...
Well, it was fine. When I was there, it was fine, because we had... I think Carol may have been I'm not sure. The people who were directing the Writing Centers did a great job, and they never came to me with problems, and I never came to them with criticism. So, you know, and they have all the... They would do their own... You know, they did their own kind of review stuff, and when we would do departmental reviews, it would be... appended to the departmental review, and they did. So they collected all the data, they did all of that, which was just outside my purview.
Right, because you mentioned earlier that they kept track of the success rates of students that would have been in the remedial classes but were now in...
Well, that's what Brian did that. That was the comp program did that.
So between that and then the Writing Center collected their own data, what was going on in the Writing Center?
Yeah.
I get the feeling that those two pieces would give us a pretty good sense of, like, what the Writing Center was accomplishing, if that's the right way to put it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, to figure out what the Writing Center obviously had some effect on the mainstreaming project, but I don't know that you could tease out how much of the... I mean, there are too many variables, I mean, you'd have to look at who were the two who were teaching the classes. I mean, there's just...
I don't know who the students were.
Yeah, and I think what he discovered was it wasn't like they all did fine. It's just they did fine at the same general rate that everybody else did. I think what that speaks to most is the entrance criteria, the testing criteria for getting into a college were just not valid.
Got it. Do you remember if you or any of the other faculty members noticed a difference in student writing when the Writing Center started seeing more of the first-year students?
I don't know. I didn't, but I don't... I was not... I didn't teach a lot. Yeah. I mean, I taught one seminar every semester and then one other course, usually 1 of 5, until I stopped. When I was chair, when everybody had to teach a freshman writing course, I felt like I had to be one of those people too. So I actually took on an additional course because I was otherwise would have taught one course a year. But I wanted to and had to teach a graduate seminar. So that's, I taught 105 and whatever seminar I was teaching. So I didn't personally notice it. And I know that people, a lot of the faculty were very happy teaching 101 and 102. And continued to teach it after the thing was... I think that what they did was they said you could teach You didn't have to teach 101 and 102, but you could teach any writing course, and that include not like a writing intensive course, but you could teach tech or business writing or creative writing, you know, or writing about literature. So a lot of people moved in the direction that they wanted to move in,
right?
But a lot of people stayed in 101 and 102, and then a lot of people just left it. And this is more about that, but Beth Baim and I did gave papers at some conference. Oh, I think it was the Association of Departments of English, which is a constituent of MLA that focuses on you know, the administration of it sort of supports chairs and directors of graduate studies, stuff like that. And we were invited to give a talk on this because I had talked about it at ADE meetings before, and they asked if we would come and give a formal talk. And so I gave my talk, which was the sort of positive side of it. And then she did this survey and said, and which showed that people were not as happy as I had sort of optimistically claimed that they would be.
Was your talk focused on the faculty or the
program? The faculty.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I can see why yours feel a little bit different than another person.
Well, mine was more like, this is what it's supposed to be, and this is why I think it'll work and did work, and this is what it accomplished, which was, and I emphasized, you know, the writing center and the, when we got new money for technology, we got another technology classroom, we got all this stuff, you know. And then she did a survey, which was the title was something from the heart of darkness.
That's optimistic.
It was funny, and I was like sitting right there next to her. She's like one of my best friends, and she said, now I realize I'm sitting next to my chair. This is one of my best friends, but I don't think I'm not sure that would have anything to do with the writing center, except it's all part of the same ecology. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same people.
Yeah, especially when everything for the writing center stems from the English department. It's kind of, in some ways, hard to separate the English department from writing centers.
And I imagine the English, well, I don't know, you could tell me. I mean, is the percentage of students from the English department higher than other departments?
That work here?
Yeah, or no, that come here as clients.
It kind of depends on the time of the semester.
Yeah.
As the 101, 102 papers
right.
come due,
yeah.
we see a lot of students. From those populations, but at the same time, we see a fair amount of graduate students that are publishing journal articles
right.
that are getting us to look through those. But I think a good percentage of ours are the early English classes.
So you don't get a lot from, say, I don't know, history or
no, I've only seen a couple,
whatever.
Couple history papers. Once in a while, there's a biology paper. We see a fair amount of engineering yeah. papers.
Engineering, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that tells you something. I mean, you know, well, engineering students have to take, they have to take a writing course, which they offer. That was another decision. I wasn't chair then, so that was not my choice, but I wouldn't have, so, never mind.
Yeah, so we just kind of see a good spread of people coming in for help with, like, learning to write a regular English essay or learning how to work through, like, a memo or a letter of some kind. Well,
I used to send my students, I guess this would be 105 students, because I don't know that the graduate students probably did, you know, they kind of mentor themselves. But I would send them to come in to get help developing a thesis.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we talked a lot about that in class, and I talked a lot about that in, you know, conferences, but never hurts to have somebody else look at it, you know, and not a thesis statement, but an argument, you know,
thesis.
Yeah,
yeah,
not how to write that sentence, which is what, you know, they think that's, but this is my thesis, you
know? It's part of it.
Yeah, it doesn't argue anything.
Do you remember if there were any major staff changes in the early days of the Writing Center, either at the administrative level or like who was running the Writing Center itself?
No. So Carol was the writing center director for quite a while. Then I think it was after that, so not while I was chair, so I think it was after that that there was this other person who did not work out. And then I think after that, it was Bronwyn. I think that's only been the three.
Pretty short.
Yeah.
Short line.
Yeah.
Short and consistent.
Well, because when Carol was hired, that's what she was hired for. And it didn't mean that she had to do it for the rest of her life.
Right.
But, you know, she made a substantial commitment to us. And I think she did it until she retired. Although I could be wrong. I don't remember stuff. I mean, it's been a while ago. I don't remember the details the way I used to.
Well, it's tough. It was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's somebody else's job at that point.
Yeah. I consider the Writing Center one of the great successes of the English department. And I always used to say that, you know, I always used to, you know, be one of the things that, you know, we would like, if you had to list your accomplishments, mm-hmm. that was always one of the things I included. I don't know if that's the case anymore or not.
Well, it's continued to help lots of different students and writers.
Yeah.
It's still helping them.
No, I know. I know it's still successful. I don't know whether its success is touted by the department. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, it could be.
I don't have any
information about that.
Maybe I'll go dig into that, too.
Yeah. Well, I think that the relationship between the department and the Writing Center was fostered by having a rhetoric composition studies chair.
I mean, that makes sense, because that goes hand in hand with what writing centers do anyway.
Yeah, so. I mean, I had always worked at universities that had strong writing centers. You know, I knew about writing centers. I knew what they do. I knew about, I used to teach 620 every year, which is the research methods class. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would introduce that we would read a lot of, basically, we just read research articles and tried to talk about how they work. And I would always try to include, we did like different methodologies, but I tried to include different things that people did research about. And I would always have at least one on Writing Center research. So, you know, I forgot what this was about, but anyway, I mean, I think because I was the first rhetoric composition chair and the first woman chair in the department as well. But I had a PhD in literature. And so I was not seen as a sort of threat to the rest of the department, although in the end I probably did threaten them more than they had real. But I don't know that, I mean, I think because I had that background, I understood the importance of it, and I was prepared to argue for it, which I don't think the chair before me never had.
Because you said you had kind of the dual focus of the lit and the rhetoric comps, you understood
both sides. That was my background. I mean, by the time I came here, I continued to teach some literature classes, but most of my teaching was in graduate seminars or, you know, 105.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that addresses all of the questions I had down. Is there anything else that you could think of to add?
No, I don't know if this is something that you've thought about asking about or care to even follow, but excuse me, I've always sort of wondered about the relationship between the Writing Center and the Delphi Center.
I had not thought about that.
If there's a source of tension there.
No, I've worked with a few people from the Delphi Center, mm-hmm. But I've never actually been up there to see.
Well, it's just in terms of what they do. So I was on a conference. You know, they do these annual conferences. They did one on computers stuff, and somebody recommended me, and so I was on the committee that year, and I was just sort of struck by how different their mission was, which is, you know, but I'm just wondering, I guess because they only work, they work directly with teachers. They don't work with students at all. Yeah, so maybe it's not an issue. I don't know. I just always wondered about, you know, it seems like there ought to be overlap, but there probably, I'm not sure there is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe too that. Political to bring that up.
That's an interesting point, either way.
I guess the only thing, and I said it before, I just emphasize, there's got to be tons of data somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it is.
In a cupboard or on a hard drive?
Yeah, or on a hard drive, probably on a hard drive. And you should, because I know they kept records every year, as I'm sure they do now, mm-hmm. of who comes in and blah, blah, you know. And I know Carol has all those archival stuff, which it seems to me would be really interesting to look at. Yeah. Plus, she would have her own archive. I mean, she would have had an archive just for us as mm-hmm. well. And it would have had, probably have flyers and folders and all that kind of
That's
stuff
exciting.
In it. Yeah, yeah. You should definitely get talk to her.
Will do. Yeah, I'll look into that.
Okay.
Anything else?
I can't think of anything.
Thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
And sharing all of your memories with us.
Thank you for inviting me. It's interesting to look back and talk about. Yeah. I'm very happy to be retired. But there's, I come back to on campus and there's, I realize how much I miss it in a way.
It must be hard.
It is hard.